Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next workshop coming up March 27th through the 29th in Pennsylvania. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I am blessed today. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. Well, before we get started, I just want to remind our listeners, as we do just from time to time, that we are a listener-supported broadcast, which means that the only way that you're actually hearing this program right now is because of the generous support of those who come alongside of us and decide to financially give to this ministry. If you'd like to learn about the various ways that you can partner with us, not only financial, but there are other ways as well, simply go to puresexradio.com and visit on and click on the donate link. So, Stephen, you've got an interesting sheet of paper in front of me here that just it feels very hodgepodge-like. I see all these words. I see just not, you know, there's no complete sentences.
And I'm to stump you.
I'm like, what road are you going to take me down?
Keep us off balance
today
here. So these are words said by men that are starting the recovery process. These are insights. These are just a collection of terms I wrote down to sort of peek into what's the change happening to a man. You know, I love to try to understand how people think. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me how people don't think about how they think.
Right.
That's pretty bizarre. But does it make sense that if you have a worry issue, you talk a lot about worry, you know, or fear, but you don't always know you have fear, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just being protective. I'm just being, you know, but you can hear fear come out. But that person wouldn't necessarily own it. They go, no, I'm not. And so it's like people don't think very clearly about how they think. They don't understand. They don't press in. They just act a certain way, and they never review it. So isn't it great to be able to peek into a man's mind when he hits some kind of junction of aha, an awakening moment, if you will? So that's what I was doing. I was capturing concepts that men were saying, hey, you know what the change in me is? I can say it this way to you. So these are just a bunch of words or descriptors that men are saying, hey, the shift is happening in my being. And I can see it now, and I can tell you what it is. Because the first one goes like this.
And I would just say, in terms of what you're talking about, this page that I'm looking at is a great actual visual and picture of what you're talking about. It's kind of a messy, confusing, it's not a very, not real clear lines.
And I think real clean, right?
Yeah, and I think the listeners need to know that sometimes this page can represent exactly what you need to do and just find a space where you can dump all of those thoughts, all of those feelings. They don't need to be in order. They don't need to be figured out yet. That's part of what this page represents is just start getting them all down, just start throwing them all out
there. Start somewhere. Because the lie is, I can't know me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can't know me. And I can't help me. And of course, I can't fix me. Mm-hmm. I have to be broken. And because all my life I've been broken. And I don't mean fix yourself. I mean with God's help, obviously. But he did give us a brain. He gave us a community.
But the big lie there is there's no hope, that I can't actually change.
That's it. That's exactly right. So the first comment is this. I think I'm operating at a new level of honesty. This is an unusual place for me to be this honest. Because mostly I hide, I avoid, I do those other words. But there's something happening where I've gotten to a new level of honesty, and I like it.
Mm. Well, and I think that's it's such a weird kind of thing to point out, don't you think? Because sort of one of the duh statements or one of the duh thoughts that a lot of people have when they think about recovery is, of course you've got to be honest. Right? How can you be free and living a life of purity and integrity if you're not honest? But it is remarkable when you've been living in the darkness of dishonesty for so long, it is an enlightening kind of thought to think, I'm being honest. There's a level of truth in my being that I have not experienced before, and it's a refreshing kind of a thing. It's really it's a new day for
a person. I'm being honest, and it's okay, right? This new day, it's like climbing up a hill and getting to the top for the first time. Well, I see things clearer now. I see where I am. I've been climbing this hill and falling down over and over again, and I got to the top, and I have some new level of honesty, and I'm alive. Because most folks think I have to hide, I have to be dishonest.
And I like the way this is worded, because keep in mind, this is a person that's just, they're just unpacking what's in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this person is saying this about a new level of honesty. Now, some of you out there who might be more prone to really hard black and white lines will say, listen, there's no levels of honesty. You're either honest or you're not. Mm. Well, let's show some grace here, okay? Because this is a person who's probably been drowning for years in nothing but lies. I mean, they've probably been, I know in my own history, I'd gotten to such a point of self-deception that I would lie about things that I didn't, quote, need to lie about. It was just whatever came out of my mouth, it was just natural to tell a lie. Somebody could say, did you go 1 mile? And I'd say, I went 1.2 mile. I just couldn't tell the absolute truth. So when this person is discovering, I'm actually holding a line that's nothing like I held before. Some people may look at this person and say, well, are you being absolutely brutally honest? I mean, are you being totally, 100%.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, listen, let's take any shred of honesty that this person's willing to offer.
That's so gracious, right? It's so graceful, because brutally honest, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's hard.
When a guy opens up and rips himself, it's like, I might die.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been here before. Raw exposure. So the next word that was expressed was transparent. He said, I'm starting to be more transparent. Now, I think about that word and what it means to be transparent. It doesn't, it means clearer or starting to be able to see through
something. Unhidden. Yeah. I mean, the idea of,
and I don't always get a very crystal clear picture, but I see a sense of like light coming in a window that's still a little dirty or something. But I'm starting to be, I'm letting the light come in, and I'm starting to open up myself a little bit and testing this out. I'm being a little bit more transparent.
And the way I always picture that word, I like the fact that you use the idea of light coming in through a window, because really, when a guy is saying that he's becoming more transparent, there's a sense of openness occurring in his being that he didn't have before. I mean, if you think about somebody who's deep into an addiction, they're a very closed person. They're closed emotionally. They're closed spiritually, mentally. I mean, they're just closed. And so a person saying, I'm feeling more transparent, it's very much like that window getting cleaned to their soul. And it's like, okay, I'm letting some light in. I'm letting some other people look in. And I love this idea because, man, the vulnerability and the courage that it takes for a person to start being transparent is huge. And again, I think we need to celebrate the little steps.
Yes.
You know, it's so easy to point out all the imperfectness in a person that's taking this journey, but let's point out the things that they are doing that they haven't been doing. And this guy's saying, I've been closed. I've had a dark window. I've kept it covered up. And now I'm opening myself up. And hey, let's celebrate that. That's progress.
So the next guy said, I've really had no friends, and I've joined a group now, and I'm starting to open up, and I'm starting to develop friendships of people that know the deep, ugly part of me. And that's what I mean when I had no friends. No one knew me. Sure, mm-hmm. I was around people. Sure, I was social. I'm not sitting in a corner, you know, in a dark corner avoiding society. I looked just like you, but nobody knew me. And now I'm developing people that really know me, like at a soul level or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of the interesting phenomenons of or phenomena of addiction is that I've never met a guy personally who's developed what we would consider a full-blown sexual addiction who actually has any deep friends. It's like they're mutually exclusive. Mm. Because of the isolating, disconnecting nature of addiction, you are actually pulling away from people in order to perpetuate an addiction. And so this makes sense that there would be kind of a revelation here of, wow, I'm actually getting friends. I mean, in a sense, I almost feel like a little kid coming out of this man. Who's his whole life he's been going, all I've ever wanted is a friend.
Wow, that's good.
The little seven-year-old boy inside of him is coming alive.
I don't
want to
play alone anymore.
Yeah, and in a sense, I get the picture of that little seven-year-old mustering up the courage to go knock on the neighbor's door and say, can Jimmy come out and play? I mean, it's like, I just see this picture of a guy's heart opening up and realizing, I don't have to be alone. I can have a friend. And what I think is interesting about this, too, is kind of the order that we're even going in here. This guy's, you know, and these aren't necessarily the same person, but the idea of there being a new level of honesty. Well, what does it require to create intimacy and deep friendships? You got to tell the truth to each other. Mm-hmm. And a new level of transparency. What else does it take to build friendships and intimacy? You got to let people look inside. You got to open yourself up. And so there's even, you know, I don't think this was even planned this way, but there's almost a progression here.
That's great. Yes, there were random thoughts. That's good, though, that you're putting it together that way. So the next gentleman said, I've heard this word all my life, and I knew I wanted it, but I didn't know how to get it. And the word is intimacy. Mm. There's something about that word, not sexual intercourse, but intimacy, that just, it's almost like charming or desirable, or we seem to have a natural appetite to be in a close, safe, intimate relationship. But he said, I knew it wasn't for me, but it was always out there, and it sounded so good, but I knew where I was and how far away it was.
And can't you hear the shame lies that are like the wall that keep a person from intimacy? I mean, listen to what this guy was saying. I knew it wasn't for me. Why? He had some sort of false sense of identity that his value was low, that he didn't have any worth to anybody else, that nobody could possibly look at him and see value and see somebody that they'd want to be a friend of. And so it's just amazing to me how fear and shame keep a person locked away from intimacy. Because I've heard it said before that, you know, you can think of intimacy as into me see. So like, that's what intimacy is. I want you to look into me and see me, and then and be okay with that, and be willing to still be my friend and challenge me and love me and push me forward. And so I think we meet a lot of guys that have that false belief that I couldn't have that kind of deep connection with anybody, with my spouse, with a friend.
Mm-hmm. So the next statement is, after I've been talking about my struggle and opening up and being more transparent, you know what? I've noticed that fear has gone away. Sort of outing myself and being loved by other guys who are willing to openly embrace the issue, the fear has gone. The very thing that held me in check was I was afraid of being rejected, not being enough. I was afraid of being a freak. And I would tell myself over and over, I was afraid. But when I stepped into this group and started talking and got acceptance, the fear has gone away. I'm mm-hmm. not afraid anymore.
And this is the discovery that I love seeing men make when they come into group or when they come into you know, a setting where it's safe enough for them to tell their story. It's like, I mean, the best way I can describe it is just like a 1,000-pound weight mm-hmm. gets lifted off their shoulder. And it's like the more they're immersed in an environment where there is safety, there is grace, there is accountability, it's like it increases their courage. You know, it's like that first time, I mean, to initially make that step of telling your story is terrifying. I mean, it's just because you still have all these ideas of what might happen if you step across that line and actually share your full story. But when you do, and somebody actually steps toward you, and not to punch you, but like steps toward you to actually That's embrace great. You, to receive your story, it's like it fosters a whole new level of courage, and then you're willing to go a step further and a step further and a step further. And so, yeah, the fear sloughs off after a while because you realize, you know what, I didn't spontaneously combust. I didn't, you know, I didn't fall apart.
Yeah, I didn't become a zero, a nothing, a mm-hmm. nobody.
And I'm actually still gained a friend or gained some friends along the way. So,
very good. So the next statement that we hear sometimes is, this is hard to say, but I'm learning to trust. I haven't trusted myself. I didn't trust anyone in my family. I don't trust my wife very much. I don't trust other people, but I realize I can't go forward. And so now I'm starting to rest a little bit more in this belief. I can trust in this belief that I'm human and you're human and you have good intention, I have a good intention. And so I'm going to trust myself with you some. I'm going to take a risk where I've never risked before.
And I want to share my personal journey in this respect, because one of the reasons I think why it's so difficult for a person who's, you know, kind of they've immersed themselves in that self-absorbed addictive pattern, one of the reasons I think it's very difficult for that person to trust is because they're probably very accustomed to being in control, at least having the perception of being in control. That's one of the delusions that an addict embraces is I'm in control, you know, and what it really is they are great manipulators, and in a sense their own lives are out of control, but they spend their whole life controlling other people's lives, And so from my own story, I mean, control was a huge issue. Mm. I had to make sure I had my finger in every pie, and I'm controlling everybody, making sure it's all going the way I want it to go. And just as a little sidebar, I still struggle with this. This is still a struggle. I mean, it doesn't manifest itself in the same way, but I still struggle with this. And so the idea of trust, you know what trust takes? Trust takes releasing control. Because to trust someone else with your heart, with your thoughts, guess what? You don't have control over what they're going to do with what you give them.
Right.
You know, if you try to reach out and then control it, guess what? You're manipulating again.
Right.
And so trust requires this a massive amount of release and saying, I'm not going to choose to control you. I want to invite you into this back and forth relationship where I'm actually giving you parts of my heart, parts of my being, and saying, I'm trusting you with this.
And he said, I'm learning.
Yeah, exactly.
To trust. It's like we start in first grade when we start our education, right, or kindergarten. But you know, we start in the first 3 years, we start to learn to read, you know, that kind of a thing.
I would actually say I can still claim this statement. I'm learning to trust. Mm. I may not be in kindergarten anymore, but I still am continuing this journey of trust, learning to trust.
Thank you. So I can see now how I have deceived and how much deception has been involved in my life and how much wasted time avoiding, denying, all the words, minimizing, attacking. I use every tool that I can think of in past tense. I have used every tool to deceive other people. And it's becoming more clear now. Just the practice of deception has stunted me.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting. I think it's a 1-2 punch that usually happens when a guy finally has his eyes open to the fact that he's addicted. He's out of control. And then he starts to engage this honesty of like starting to tell the truth about what he's done. Tell the truth about where he's been, you know, those kind of things. It's almost like that's the primer to then giving him a clearer vision of all the other deception that he's been involved in. It's like he needed to just first be able to say, I was wrong. I have an addiction. You know, those very basic statements of honesty. And then it's like that opens the door for him to be able to see all the other parts of his life in which deception has tainted.
Yeah, been out front, right, to keep people from getting close.
Yeah.
But you're saying you have to admit, I have a problem, I have a struggle, I have an addiction, you know, my life's out of control, I'm stunted, I haven't done my real work. And when you say that, then you say, what have I been doing? And you see this deception.
Yeah, right? And I think that's what happens. It's like the honesty is the first step in taking his eyes off of himself. So then what happens? When he turns and looks at his wife, he sees maybe for the first time how deeply he's deceived her, how much he's hurt her. And it's like he couldn't see that until he admitted he had a struggle, which took his eyes off of himself to be able to see others.
That's good. And what another thing that's becoming clearer to me is that how much disconnection there has been between the real me and the real needs and this crazy out-of-control part of me. And there's a disconnect because there's a real me that has real needs. But I get caught up in this crazy part of me, and it takes over, and I follow along behind crazy me, and I end up in crazy land. And I never got my real needs met. Mm-hmm. There's a disconnect between all the things I'm doing and all my thought processes and where I end up, and I don't get taken care of. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to take care of me.
And that's one of the other deceptions, I think, of like pornography and all this other stuff, is guys have been deceived into thinking, you know, I can sort of keep all that stuff over here in my me compartment. You know, that's just my me time, and that's you know, that's just a little bit of sexual pleasure time. And they try to compartmentalize that, and then they wonder why their lives feel so divided. and why they do feel this disconnect. Well, it's like you're trying to live two different lives. You're trying to live one that is this secret, destructive life, and you're trying to live this other that's this facade of a guy that's got it all together and the perfect family and the 2.5 kids and the what, you know. It's like, man, that's a lot to carry. And so he's finally recognizing, you know, a disconnected life, it puts everything out of joint. And so then you wonder why you're straining through life and you can't seem to get any strength, any momentum.
And that's a good way. I'm looking at you. You're stretching your arms out. You got two fists that are far apart, right? Because there's a healthy me that needs to be loved. And there's a goofy me that's doing stupid things. And they're way apart. There's a big void between the real need and all the activity and energy and motion.
Mm-hmm.
So he described that as a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys said this, it's going to be difficult, but I'm going to try to be open every day, just one day at a time. I'm going to be more open. And think about all the words we said. What does that mean? Transparent, vulnerable, more honest, less afraid. I'm going to try and keep my heart open so I can be more honest and real. So I don't practice my disconnect and goofy.
And I'll tell you what I absolutely love about this guy's statement and kind of what he's processing in his mind and in his heart is the daily aspect. He's not, listen, a lot of times, you know, guys who develop an addiction, I always like to say, you know, addicts can be the most dramatic people you will ever meet. You know, it's like everything's either all or nothing.
I mean, it's
just
true.
Big or small.
What do you want me to do? Become nothing?
Right.
You know, they say dramatic things. I'm going to have to give it all up. What do you want me to do? You know,
what I love about this is he's saying, listen, I'm going to just focus on today because it'd be real easy. You know, guys come in making all kinds of promises. I'm never going to do that again. And I'm going to be the best husband ever. And all these grandiose kind of ideas that are these, you know, lifelong commitments that they're making. And I love this guy saying, you know what? I think the only thing I can pay attention to is today. Let me just try to be. And you know what? He's not even saying I'm going to be totally, absolutely this perfect, transparent person today. He's saying, I'm going to try to be a little more open today than I was yesterday, just a little bit. Let's just see if I can kind of go on that path of growth.
So the next comment was an interesting word, apprehensive. Mm-hmm. I've just been so apprehensive. Now think about apprehensive as a whole dialogue. Now, it's one word, but it captures like three or four concepts. So he says, I've been apprehensive, which we could decode to mean, I've thought these thoughts. It won't work. Mm-hmm. What you're saying, that's about other people. It's not about me. It won't work. Or, well, I can't do it. I can't really do it. It's too hard. Don't they know how long and old and deep and hard and encrusted this is? No, it won't work. I can't do it. And you don't really believe that stuff, do you? You don't really know what you're talking about, really. You're just saying those words because that's like you're trying to be Jesus and say all the Jesus words. You don't really live that in your being. It won't work. There's no way out. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck. I'm so apprehensive. Do you hear the dialogue? What do you think?
And what I would say to this person is, you know, sometimes what we falsely assume when you come into a recovery environment is that the journey is about getting to a place where there is zero tension in your being. And the fact of the matter is, I think there needs to always remain a healthy tension in our being.
Mm.
It's called a struggle. Right. It's called the fact that we're wrapped in flesh. And so I think if you can understand that this journey is not about removing all tension that could ever be in your being, all this idea of apprehension, but the idea that says we don't have to live under the fear of what we need to do, you know, what may be out there and all the things that we got to face, but we do need to be okay, get a more familiarity with the idea that there's going to be tension in our being, and that doesn't mean that we're going to fall apart.
Yeah, but you got to define that just a minute, because tension, what are you saying? You're going to leave me in a tense state, and you're saying I'm flesh and I'm spirit, right? And I can do good, but sometimes I don't do so. The tensions, I'm a sexual being, but God made me that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
What comes to mind when you say that? or close us out.
Well, and I think you explained it well there. That's all I meant by the tension there, because unfortunately we're out of time. And folks, listen, if you've got things that you need to unpack on your journey, these thoughts, let us be your piece of paper. We want to be able to capture those and help you along in your journey, and you can do that by contacting us at puresexradio.com, and we look forward to having you back here again next week on the show.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.